the Monday Footy Review with Jimmy Bartel.
Bartel, clever, brilliant, unbelievable, actually. Jimmy with a bit of magic.
Well done to Peter Kane from Ballarat as well. A bit of magic from Jim. Nick Haynes was our Friday face-off winner. Boomer gets the points, and Peter's won a $100 voucher for Ribera's at Swallows, where they offer simply the best and freshest seafood available. And I know Adam White loves the Ribera's at Swallows information and cuisine when he gets a chance to get out there and do it. So well done to Boomer, got some points, and Peter Kane from Ballarat, our Friday face-off winner. Jimmy Bartel's always a winner. He joins us on a Monday morning. Good morning, Jim.
Morning, gentlemen. How are we in this ongoing, confusing season of football? Because if you go back, Thursday and Friday was the end of the round, and we forgot that the St Kilda Gold Coast Suns on the Thursday night was a really close, tight affair, and I think Gold Coast keeps winning everyone's respect. And then the Giants and the Bombers were Friday night, and then Saturday we started the new round, and we're halfway through the new round while I'm talking to you.
Yeah, we've got some work to do, Jim. We've got some work to do.
So what do we want to talk about? Do we want to talk about round 10B or round 11A?
Well, 10B's got some meat, but we'll focus on 11A at the moment. We'll get to 10B a little bit later on, because 11A gave us the match of the year, Jim. Let's go straight there.
Yes.
Straight to the match of the round, the highlight of the 2020 calendar in the world of Australian rules football. Port Adelaide and Richmond on Saturday at the Adelaide Oval was an absolute joy to watch in just about every respect. In the end, it was a win by 21 points to the pair. Why were they so good, Jim? What made them the champions on that day?
Well, just about the game, firstly, half, and the reason why it was such a good game is, you know, this is what happens when you get two very good sides playing each other and both believe that their system is the best system. So what often happens when you have two good sides, sometimes you have a side that goes, let's just use, for example, Port Adelaide. Richmond have been the champs for the last 3 years. Let's do everything we can to stop them. Let's, you know, shut the game down in this way. Let's try not to do this. And that's where you have those sort of dour arm wrestles where more one side's trying to prevent the other side from doing something they do really well. Whereas I felt like that Port Adelaide and Richmond game, Port Adelaide go, yeah, we know what you do well, Richmond. And Richmond did it really well. Even though they were missing some key personnel, their system was still good. But I felt Port Adelaide went, we play a good brand of footy. Let's stick to that. Let's play that really front half pressure game. Let's play that, yeah, let's get it quick out of our back half and play the game in our front half, set up from there. And let's try and attack, still keep attacking the game, because that'll stand us in good stead. Is that fair? Did you guys see the game that way? It was just two sides competing, like Ramo, just competing with their style?
Yeah, I did. Look, I love the game because it was hard, it was tough, it was quick. But Port Adelaide should have won that game by 7 or 8 goals in the end. Charlie Dixon missed 4 goals directly in front, 15, 20 metres out. Kane Farrell missed one, the same sort of distance. Robbie Gray was robbed by about 2 seconds of kicking a goal right on half time. Oh, yeah. Richmond had 24 inside 50s for the game. They had two in the last quarter. They left Dustin Martin sitting in a forward line for the entire last quarter. Clearances were 40 to 22 in Port Adelaide's favour. Contested football was plus 40 in Port Adelaide's favour. So really, in the end, a 21-point margin for Richmond was a good result considering what it could be. So I think what that does, Richmond were leading that game by a point at three-quarter time. And you just looked and you thought, how are they, with the way the stat sheet looked, how are they possibly leading that game? But what they did, they were efficient. They had 17 scoring shots from 24 inside forward 50s. Jack kicked 3 and was looking really, really dangerous. But I think without Prestia and without Cochin, we don't know when Prestia's coming back. Obviously, Cochin was managed on the weekend. Their midfield, because they played Dusty forward so much. Now, that might have been a management issue as well. But like that last quarter, when the game was up for grabs, the whips were cracking. They never looked like it in that last quarter, the Tigers.
Yeah, yeah. And sorry, Whitey. Richmond can do that. Like, I know those stats were completely blown out of the water, but Half, you and I have spoken that sometimes with stats with Richmond, it's a bit hard to get a measure on. They're a team that can get blown out of the water in a lot of stats, but still win the game by 3-4 goals. They're that type of team. They're an efficient team.
Yeah, I don't even look at the stats when I'm watching Richmond play because they are bordering on irrelevant. I mean, that inside 50 count is quite remarkable, Rama.
Yeah,
31
you're not
more.
Winning with 24 inside 50s.
No, that's true.
31 more is unbelievable. But to only lose by 21 points with 31 more is quite unbelievable as well. And to be up by three-quarter time with 22 inside 50s is remarkable. They're just a different team, Richmond. I don't think you can look too much into it. But that goes to show the dominance of the power. And their ability to own the ball, own possession, own territory, and make it hard for Richmond to transition. That's the thing that stood out for me. Richmond are one of the great transition teams in footy, and they couldn't get near it.
One of the key reasons why the game was played the way it was because Richmond was on tilt from very early on in the game. And what I mean by that is that Port got the fast start. So for Richmond to get in the game, they had to put enormous speed on the game and take risks just to get back into the game. So, and they did that successfully, but from that moment on, the game just kept getting quicker and quicker because of the nature of how Richmond was going to be able to win was by taking a lot of risks because of the dominance of Port Adelaide's midfield. And, you know, Ollie Wines is making a big difference, I think, Rama, and also Tom Rockliffe. We talked a little bit about Tom earlier. But one of the issues with Port was starting to be that they didn't quite have that midfield depth that other good teams had. But when you get Rockliffe and Wines winning a lot of footy around the ball and around the contest, it's making a massive difference for them because those peripheral players can just be peripheral players.
Ollie Wines, 28 possessions, 22 of those were contested on the weekend. He had 10 clearances and a goal. He was enormous. Travis Boak was enormous again. But we don't see, Rosie didn't play on the weekend. Butters plays on a half-forward flank. So they've got great depth if they want. So what that performance does, Richmond walk away from that going, yeah, okay, it was a great game. We lost. We were in it. We can play it a lot better. But at Frank's, the minds of the Port Adelaide players, that they know they're good enough now against the better teams. I think everyone was still wondering with Port Adelaide on top of the ladder, going, but are they really the best team in the comp at the moment? Now, right now, I think they should have some real confidence that they are an absolute legitimate contender to win the premiership this year. Charlie Dixon is an absolute beast forward. He could have kicked five easily on the, like I said, he missed four set shots that were just absolute gimmies. And he was all over Noah Bolter. Noah Bolter's been lauded as, you know, the next sort of great wide hope at Richmond as a key defender. People have even, you know, I heard comparing him to Alex Rance a couple of weeks ago. So, but when you've got a big key forward like that, I love Georgiades. Robbie Gray kicks three goals and has 20 possessions. Zach Butters is a star. This is me personally. Rosie's a star, but I think Butters is absolutely level pegging with Rosie at the moment in terms of quality of player. So Port have got a lot to like. We spoke about their defensive unit earlier, Jimmy, and how good they are. Their back six or seven is just set. It's set in stone. You know exactly the players that are going to be there. That's that team within a team. So they're the real deal, Port.
Yeah, and the thing I like about their back six, Rama, is it's got sort of, you call it, the all bases covered, and where some sides don't. So they've got their intercepting defender. Tommy Jonas can intercept the footy really well. They've got their lockdown defender, small defenders, but they've also got their run and carry off the half-back line. You know, Darcy Byrne-Jones takes the game on off half-back. They've got some quality kickers back there as well. So they've got sort of all the points covered across the back line. You have a look at some sides a bit lower down the table. They might have one or two of those, but they're missing something. Or they're really heavy in one department and they're looking for something in another. Like, I still think the Cats, who are a very good side, need someone who carries the football out of their back line or kicks it a lot more. I know Tui, when he plays down there, but Tui doesn't do it as much as when he was at Carlton. At Geelong, he sort of just stands there and picks his way through. So that's just the example I'm using. But with Port Adelaide, you highlighted one player who, even though he's a first-year player, I think it's the importance of him, which is Georgiades. We mentioned big Chaz Dixon. Now, I think until they put Georgiades and the extra ruck down forward, I think it actually takes a bit of pressure off Dixon, because I think early in the year, it was Dixon or bust. Like, I know Robbie Gray's there, but I'm talking about when you need to go long, you need a marking target or just a contest to bring Robbie Gray and other of those talented players on the Port Adelaide forward line in. if Charlie was beaten, well, then Port Adelaide could get beaten. But now that they've got different tall options that actually complement each other. So Charlie can move, he can body up, he can launch at the footy. Georgiadis comes at the footy really well. And the rest of the ruckman can just stand there and plant himself under the footy.
Well, it's a good point about that second ruckman, because Laddams has given Port Adelaide an extra dimension. They've tried just Laddams. On the weekend, they had Laddams and Lysette in the team together. It does feel like they've got all the ingredients now, Port. It was a good test against Richmond. There's no doubt about that, but I still look at Richmond and think of the players that need to come back into that team. There's a lot to come back into Richmond. I think this next one, the Port Adelaide Geelong one's the one. If they can back it up, Port Adelaide, and beat Geelong, having beaten an understrength Richmond, there's not really much more left for them to prove.
Yeah, that's fair, I reckon.
Yeah, I'm not sure there's too much for them left to prove. Yeah, there's still Richmond weren't full strength, but I think it's about survival at this stage for a lot of teams too, and just getting out there and doing what you can with what you've got out there, because a lot of teams are going through so many injury concerns at the moment, and that might be the case at the end of the season. There might not be. We might see a finals campaign really for the first time in a long time where we're not going to get the best players in the teams that we want in the finals.
No, I agree with that, and Port Adelaide is healthy. But what I mean by that, Half, is when you look at the ladder, Port Adelaide's on top, but they have lost to Brisbane and St Kilda below them, who are second and third. So I still think they need a couple of big scalps, that if we get to a final situation and they are in the top four, that they've got the confidence that they can actually beat teams around them inside the top four or top five, because we only play everyone once. So it's not like they're going to get another go at these teams. They'd want to win a couple more, I think, against the top teams going into a final series, just to give them that confidence.
Well, they'll play... Who will they play? Well, they play West Coast, Brisbane, St Kilda, Bulldogs and the Giants. So they've played a good chunk of the top half teams.
Yep. Still a few and they come, beat but... West Coast comfortably.
Yes.
They beat West Coast. That was when they were in the funk of that
hub.
Hub
life.
So... Yeah, I still think they, as I said, I reckon the Geelong game will tell a lot. Will tell a lot.
I think they're getting better. The power, Rammer.
Just looking at the game, as don't forget about the two teams who are playing. That should show other teams. Now Richmond's stats in that game were awful, but if you look at the way they attacked off turnover rather than going slow when they won the ball back, and how they could score. That should give the lesser teams, Whitey, confidence to attack the game rather than kicking up and down the line. Take the risk. Start taking the risk more often, because more often than not, you'll get through. You'll get through and be able to score. Now, Richmond were able to score 17 of those 24 times when they went inside forward 50. So, and it was with dash and dare. They used the forward handball really well. They used the forward handball to a player on the move. So rather than thinking, okay, we've got to use our feet here to get out, they used a forward handball three times and that took them 50 metres down the ground. So I think teams have got to look at that game in isolation for how both teams move the football. So North Melbourne and Melbourne last night, Whitey, obviously that wasn't the greatest spectacle, but those two teams now, particularly North Melbourne, I think look at that and go, okay, here's a little bit of a blueprint of how you can score and work your way through a high-pressure game.
Yeah, so go.
Yeah, it's just a quick point, and I know we all of us love watching our golf, and it's on at the moment. You almost use the golfing reference that it's take driver off the tee and solve problems later. So get it out of your back line, as Rama is saying, and solve your problems down the field. Now, Richmond, many times they came out of their back line and there was a stoppage or it got turned over. But it got turned over up near the centre of the ground, which actually gave their back line an opportunity to get up, get set. At least the midfielders can put some pressure on. So then at least the re-entry or when the turnover happened, they were in a good position that they weren't feel like they're always just defending their goal line. So, Whitey, I know you like to lay up, and so you'd be the one who'd take just a gentle 8-iron off the tee. That's what some teams are doing. They're just taking an 8-iron out of their back 50. Whereas those two teams are like, I don't have any other club off the tee apart from driver, so I'm going to use it. I'm going to get myself out of this back line, because what it'll do is, a number of times in that game, Port Adelaide, it wasn't careless attack, but they moved forward with the footy And then their back line kept coming up with them. So when Richmond actually turned it over, they just ran into the whole wall of Port Adelaide.
Mm.
Don't ever accuse Whitey of taking drivers to Tegin.
It was a soft ledge. It was a little clip on the way past. Like,
wash yourself.
It still doesn't sit comfortably with me, even though I know you're joking. Now, I know that Huff doesn't want to spend... I know Huff doesn't want to spend much time on this game, but I think it needs to be mentioned because I think there's some correlation to the Port Adelaide Richmond one. Your Melbourne North Melbourne game, our team, the Demons.
We'll do it after the break. Somebody asked off the SMS early in the day, what's happened to our Kangas? So we need to talk about that. Melbourne and North.
Right,
we need to
talk
about it. It's one of the four games played on 11A. Round 11A, it's an important part of the conversation in the Monday Footy Review, Jim. I know you're all over it. Yeah. But we'll get to a break, 23 past 7. Great to have Jimmy with us on a Monday morning. Jimmy Taranto has joined us as part of the team, and it's great to have him on side. We'll talk more about that through the morning as well. Back shortly on RSN 927.
Our display tonight for the majority of the game wasn't acceptable. It's not up to standard befitting of our football club. And I think the first quarter we had the game on our terms. We played a good brand of footy. The pressure was up, we were able to pick apart Melbourne, and then we decided to go a different path, and Melbourne took full advantage of that, and it's just not up to standard. It's not acceptable, and it's really disappointing.
That is a very forlorn Rhys Shaw post-game last night at the Adelaide Oval, the home game for the Demons, of course, at the Adelaide Oval, and they ran out victors by 57 points. It was 5 points the margin at half-time, and then it was an utter capitulation by the Kangaroos and a demolition by the Ds, 9-1 in the second half. Blew the game out, and 57 points was, in the end, flattering to the Kangaroos. And Rhys Shaw saying after the game, we're at a point now where it's unacceptable, and our fans and members need to know that. There's six games to go. We're going to find out a lot about our list, but I'm not going to give up. Jim, what happened to this attacking North Melbourne team we saw in the back half of last year? Where have they gone, boys?
Yeah, they've got a little gun shy, haven't they, Huff? In the back half of the year when Rhys Shaw first came like into power as that at that stage, the interim coach, he was straight away, you could see a real clear purpose with the way they moved the footy. So if they turn it over quickly, they weren't a side that, you know, went slow across their half back line. They made the one switch to get them going. And then, you know, you think in your head you'd see a switch, like almost a diagonal up the middle to a Higgins or a Simpkin type. And then they'd take the game forward because they knew they had Brown and some forwards. Zeebel, when he was playing forward, even Zaha and Larky, these different type of players, they just gave them an opportunity a bit quicker. Now they've sort of gone into their shell, and it happens with sides who lose confidence. They'd go, I could take it, but it could be a bit risky. I'll go back, just take that slow one up the line. But they had two clear paths. So it was the quick switch, or even when they went down the line, they went quick to their tools, like whether it was Goldstein or Brown coming up, Larky, any tool down the line. But they had a real good system and method where it was really so then they could get that contest to go quick again. They've lost a little bit of that mojo. Have I explained that long down the line sort of method that they do a little bit differently? Whereas a lot of sides would go down the line, it's really just to get the throw in. They'd actually kick it a little bit more corridor because, and it doesn't help that Cunnington's out and they've had injuries to different key players, but because they were so good at that front and square and contest, it was kick it down the line. If they didn't mark it, which they had good targets, it was to get that contest so then they could go quick again from that contest.
Well, I think we talked last week, boys, about the most important player for their team, and Nick Natanui was coming up willy-nilly. Upon reflection, it might be Ben Cunnington. They seem aimless without Ben Cunnington, the Kangaroos. He might be the most valuable player in the competition for his particular team. They just have zero life in that area of the ground when he's not there, which is most unfortunate. And the way they used Sean Higgins yesterday was interesting. He had 27 disposals, Sean Higgins. He had 24 of those in defensive half. He was the fifth most disposals on the ground, 21st highest ranked player according to champion data. He's playing behind the ball of a halfback flank. Surely you want him somewhere near where the ball's got to be so you can hit the scoreboard, Rammer.
Well, I did see that those stats, and I got sent in our little WhatsApp chat in bold letters too by somebody on this conversation at the moment. So,
it was good feedback.
But Ben Cunnington, it's the reason his value to that side is he's so creative with his hands. He gets so Higgins then plays around the contest, but he can get out with his legs. Where Cunnington gets out, he gets people out with his hands because he's so strong through the contest. Doesn't get tackled, doesn't go to ground, and then they're off and running. But their midfield at the moment, unfortunately, is pretty much, you know, one paced. They're more of a defensive type of midfield at the moment. You look at Oliver Brayshaw and Ed Langdon yesterday. They had 24 inside 50s themselves out of three players. North Melbourne had 28 inside 50s for the whole game. So you've got Melbourne trying to change their method and way over the last couple of weeks, albeit against North Melbourne and the Crows, because you know there was a criticism of Oliver in previous weeks that he was just at the contest and that was it. He couldn't get out. Now he's using his legs to get away from that, away from the contest. And that exposed North Melbourne last night. I thought Melbourne's midfield was just right on top from the get-go in that game. And it was just so, so evident. And as you say, Half, when you've got Sean Higgins, their best midfielder at the moment without Cunnington sitting in the defensive half of the ground, what hope and what chance have you got?
But it shows the problems that North Melbourne have got. I mean, they've arguably got the weakest list in the competition. And when you take out Ben Brown, Jack Zeeble, and also Ben Cunnington, they're going to struggle. Mm. That's just the reality. But what Melbourne was able to do, and I'd like to focus on the Demons, is that was a danger game for them, particularly with Max Gawn and Jack Viney out. And after a poor start, they found a way. They kicked 12 goals to 2 after quarter time. And what I liked about Melbourne, Jimmy, is that they are starting to, now albeit against weak opposition, but they're starting to be a lot more expansive on offence. They're starting to change lanes. They're playing with a lot more width, which is what we know that they can do, that they weren't doing. And when they do that, they're a very dangerous football team.
Well, it makes them more efficient inside forward 50, and that's been the bugbear for me with Melbourne for the last 2 years, is their ball use going inside forward 50. They could always win it around the contest because that's all they spoke about, contested footy. And they'd send every man and his dog like to the contest. Like Ron Barassi would come, David Meats would be in around there. Like they'd just get anyone with a Melbourne jumper and they'd go inside 50. They didn't have the balance. But a bit with what you were saying there, Whitey, is they're starting to get the balance a bit better. They're starting to know when to handball and kick. And again, you said with competition who was a little bit down. But further to that, I hope they take the fact that Max Gawn and Viney out and the way that they set up around the stoppage and apply a little bit more of that when Max Gawn and Viney does come back in. Because they had young Jackson and McDonald doing the ruck against Todd Goldstein, who we all say, I think we all agree, has been absolutely brilliant this year, and you know, dominated them in hitouts, but clearances were pretty much even. And all the midfielders filled their boots full of possessions. So I'd like them to take a bit of that sort of mindset and approach when they do stoppages, when Gawn comes back in.
And wasn't it interesting to see Angus Brayshaw have a more meaningful midfield role, a more proactive midfield role, what he was actually capable of being able to do? I still don't understand the way they use him.
But that's based on personnel only. Like Viney goes out of the team, Brayshaw comes into the middle of the ground.
Yeah, but he's going to play there more often. I don't care whether Viney's playing or not.
No, but it's a bit of both too, Whitey. I agree he's got to play there more often. But two, he'd probably openly admit he hasn't made the most of his opportunities. So if you're a coach and you go, well, we've given you a different amount. It's not like he's been completely absent from the midfield. You've got to, when you get your opportunity, you've got to grab it by the scruff of the neck. Now, when he gets given that opportunity like he did last night, he's got to play the way he did or to that level. So when the coaching staff sits down and goes, right, this is a little bit more difficult than we think, where it's not just, oh, this player comes back in, see you, Angus, back out to a wing or half forward. So it's a bit of both. Players have got to make it so difficult for coaches that they can't move them either. Coach Harford.
Yeah, well, Brayshaw, he's still a guy that you want around the footy. His decision-making, execution has still got to improve wide if he wants to be there full-time. And when you've got Jack Viney rolling through there, he creates a different look. Viney's that bull, a bit like Petrarca, and Oliver is extending his range by using his legs, as you were talking about before, Ramo, which is good for the Demons going forward. But there's a bit of a sameness if Jack Viney is in there. I think Brayshaw creates a different dimension, a different dynamic in that midfield when he is in there. And he was very good last night, although he did turn the ball over a bit, which he shouldn't have done upon possession at times as well. So he's getting better, and he's getting a bit more confidence on the back of getting that opportunity, I think.
So one last one for me on Melbourne. It's a question for the three of you. Based on what Melbourne's done the last 3 weeks, 2 weeks, which is all they could do is win, and they did, but they won really strongly. They won by, they've improved their percentage from 90 to 110. Is it a false economy to say that they've got their confidence back and that's going to hold them in good stead when they take on Collingwood? Or is it real?
Well, there's only one answer here. It's the form ladder. If it doesn't end in form ladder, well, then it's not the correct answer. So the man who... Tongue in cheek at first, but if Melbourne hadn't won, it would have thrown Haas' form ladder surely into chaos.
Absolute mayhem it would have been, Jim.
We were very nervous last night, Jimmy, before the game.
The last five days of the form ladder was hinging on Melbourne winning those two games. For the whole thing.
Melbourne, Essendon, who have they beaten? Half. What's the form ladder? Who have they actually beaten?
Melbourne haven't. Who have they beaten? No, not too many teams. Well, we know they've beaten Adelaide North. And they beat Hawthorn, and then we're going back. So it doesn't have wins next to it, just says who they've played.
So they've got Collingwood and the Bulldogs. Collingwood and Bulldogs, the next two. So we're a forward looking group.
There's your test. That's where it works them out.
Question is, who are you tipping? Melbourne v Essendon? Because that's the game that's going to decide it all. Who are you tipping with Melbourne v Essendon?
The thing is, a couple of weeks ago when that game was meant to be on, you're tipping Essendon because 100%. The way they were playing at that stage. You're probably, right at the minute, I'd just be leaning on Essendon still.
No.
I don't know who I'm tipping. No. To answer your question, Whitey, I'm still not buying the D's, even though I'm on them and the form letter's with them 100%. I'm still not buying what I've seen the last couple of weeks.
So they've got to win a minimum of one of their next two.
All right. Well, I'll put this question. It might help answer. So the bottom half of the eight at the moment, we'd all say Geelong at six, they're probably safe, aren't they?
Yep.
They're going to play finals. That leaves Giants and Collingwood. And Melbourne, Western Bulldogs, Essendon, Gold Coast, and say Carlton, maybe Hawthorn looking in. Do you see either Geelong, GWS, Collingwood, or even Richmond up in fifth missing the eight?
I think Collingwood are vulnerable.
So at this stage, there's only one change to the eight. The eight's nearly locked.
I would think so. I think Collingwood are vulnerable with their injuries, and they seemingly have a challenge getting the best players out on the park. And there's not just one or two; there's four or five of their absolute best players who are struggling to get out there in the park, and that makes them very, very vulnerable in my eyes. Yeah, they should be Adelaide this week.
We said this earlier. If the game against Melbourne and Essendon had have gone ahead, one of those two teams are in the eight and Collingwood are out at the moment.
Yeah. Mm. Yep, that's right. So that's why they're vulnerable with that extra game. That's a fascinating byplay as part of the whole season, that extra game. That delayed game is going to cause a lot of angst and tension for a lot of clubs, I reckon.
That's great, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a different element that we've never seen before. So it will create some controversy and conversation on the back of it. Speaking of the Bombers as part of that, let's go back to Friday night, Jim, when they were taking on your boys, the Giants, as part of round 10B.
Yeah.
I quite like that scenario. The Giants ended up winning that game by 4 points. But at the halftime, James, I reckon as a director of the GWS Football Club, you would have been a little bit nervous.
Yeah, I was nervous. not playing great footy again, playing sort of the same style that gets him into trouble. And then at halftime, they actually started to defend a bit more in their front half. The forwards got involved. They played, got themselves out of their back 50, started to win some clearances, that territory game that we talk about. And they converted their opportunities. Now, to get opportunities, again, you have to play it inside your front half. But I think they really ramped up the pressure. And it was good to see when, you know, using the stats, they had 22 tackles inside forward 50. Take away the Callan Ward free kick. But the fact that a quick kick out of stoppage and he was there pressing forward, I think previously the GWS Giants early in the year, Cal Ward would be back towards the middle of the ground. And those sort of kicks would be where Essendon then get the next one, and then the Giants defenders are having to win the footy back inside their back 50. So it was a complete shift after half time for me in the way they sort of position themselves on the field.
Make no mistake, that last quarter there was a team trying to save the game, there was a team trying to win the game.
Yes.
And that's how it was. Yeah, like Phil Davis was on the Channel 7 telecast saying, we have to kick four goals in that last quarter to win this game. They were able to do that. Essendon kicked one goal. The ball was really locked in GWS's forward half for the majority of that quarter. Essendon were defending for their life. But the reality is, once GWS's midfield got on top, it always looked like they were going to run over the Bombers. So Zach Merritt led the game with 33 possessions. Then all your next possession winners, Taranto, Cornelio, Whitfield, Hopper. And then you go down to the next Essendon player, Michael Hurley. So Essendon really had no... Merritt had no help through the midfield on Friday night. So that second quarter was the outlier where Essendon, okay, they kicked six goals in that second quarter and probably got, in a way, a little bit lucky. I always felt in that game, because of that midfield dominance, GWS were going to come at some stage, and it took them to the last quarter, mind you, and took them to nearly the last kick. But yeah, in the end, it's just that midfield dominance was too good.
It's 2 weeks in a row where I think as a collective their midfield has actually played much, much better as a group. The Giants.
But surely it's an intent thing with Essendon. They kicked two goals four after half time.
100%.
They had a good lead. And they got a good lead because they actually took the game on. And the goals that they kicked were because of faster ball movement, being a bit brave. And then I think they got to three-quarter time and thought, if we can keep the Giants to three goals in this final term, we'll hold on. As opposed to if we kick three goals, they're not going to be able to beat us. And I think that's a loss that should really sit really poorly with the playing group, that they allowed that game to unravel the way it did.
My middle son said to me at three-quarter time, "My dad, do you think we're going to win?" And I said, "We need to kick two goals. If we can kick two goals, I think we can win this game." And he was sitting there going, "When are we going to kick the goals, Dad? When are we going to kick the goals?" And I said, "Son..." I said, "You're probably best off going to bed, mate."
but in fairness, Rama, the goal that they kicked in the last quarter was in the last 5 seconds.
Really,
they kicked one goal in a half of football.
Yeah.
When they had a lead. What a missed opportunity.
I would have loved, though, another 7 seconds on the clock. Because Tip and Woody took the ball out of that center bounce. Just to see what happened, just for a bit of theatre, just to see what happened.
But isn't it interesting, when they needed to win a clearance, they went to attacking players in the centre square, and oh my goodness, it actually worked.
Yeah. Especially with young Draper, who's showing more and more, like, he's a monster who can actually jump. That last hit out, he launched it. And look, Mummy is brave and as good as he was, Mummy can't jump at the moment. He just stands there and tries to put the arm out and wrestle you. So probably missed a couple of opportunities, especially in the second half, the Bombers with the taller, more athletic ruckman in Draper in the centre bounce.
I reckon the Giants dodged a bullet.
They need players the Bombers, but they're not going to get them anytime soon. So I think it's going to be too late in the season for them, unfortunately.
And Huff, you asked the question about who wins out of Melbourne and Essendon. The reality is that Melbourne have got a healthy list. Viney and Gorn will probably come back as early as this week, but the players that Essendon needs back to be a top eight team, they're not getting back. And I think that's the difference between those two teams. And I really believe that the Giants dodged an almighty bullet, because had they not won that, it puts them really in that vulnerable position where they're still not playing well. I reckon Essendon gifted them that win. But the reality is they did get the 4 points and they kept themselves inside the eight. But, gee, they still need to be playing a lot better.
So they're making up the numbers in terms of a finals perspective, the Giants?
Based on the way they're playing, but they certainly got the personnel. If they can get themselves right, they're into the premiership up to their eyeballs, aren't they?
There is no team.
Not where they're playing at the moment. They're nowhere near it.
There's no team in the eight that want to play GWS, I can guarantee you.
Why is that?
Because they're so good.
Are they so good?
Absolutely.
Their players are so good. The players are so good.
I'm not 100% convinced of all any of that. I know Jim's holding his tongue because he's a director and he's invested here, and that's okay. I'm not convinced of any of that. They've got some good players. I'm not sure they're so good, the players, and certainly the team is not so good at the moment. They're 6-4, and dodging bullets against teams that are pretty ordinary at times. I'm not buying the Giants at the moment.
Well, good teams could dodge bullets and still... You're saying they're playing so poorly at the moment. I won't put words in your mouth. You're saying they're not playing to their potential, but they're 6-4 sitting in the eight.
Yeah.
What do they need to improve by? They improved by another 10% over the next couple of weeks. They are so dangerous.
I don't know how any evidence that we've seen from the Giants this year shows them to be anything other than middle of the road. And the form ladder backs it up too, just by the way. They're ranked ninth in their form, and they're seventh on the ladder. So that's where they sit. Oh, I think that's absolutely where they are.
They'll take on West Coast with a 7-4 record in 2 weeks.
So they'll be 7-5.
Based on how they're playing, they will be.
Jim, what about West? Speaking of West Coast, let's get to that game. Yesterday, the Blues got off to a flyer against the Eagles and then came crashing down. I reckon there was a sliding doors moment. Now, a lot of talk about umpiring and free kicks and all that sort of stuff, but I reckon there was a sliding doors moment for the Blues. And Patrick Cripps was running back to the goal square and trying to mark a high ball and dropped it. And it ended up being the situation where Nitnat knew he should have been pinged for holding the ball in the back of it. But the Eagles went down the other end quickly and scored. And it was a 11-point turnaround. No, in fact, it was a 12-point turnaround because they didn't score. A 12-point turnaround, and the game started to turn on the back of that. Well, if you're David Teague, Jimmy, today, what are you reviewing? What parts of the game do you want to review the most? Because they've been in games a lot, and it's coughed up. What was that yesterday from Riley Beveridge from the AFL website? Consecutive points, 30 points in a row, 14 of the 21 games that David Teague has coached. What's he looking at the moment to try and stop that for the Blues perspective?
Yeah, I think it's a structural thing and then a teaching point of view as well, Huff. But because a game where everyone knows, but it's pointing out the unique nature of being able to coach sides at the moment and set up, you know, teach those teaching moments out on the field. So I think you show a few edits of only a couple of edits of what you don't like, but then I think you emphasise a lot of good points because of hub life and the nature of the season. I think you just more than half the art of the coaching this year is morale and actually engaging the players and getting them that positive attitude going out on the field. Because if you drill them and go, this is terrible and we've coughed up another lead and I don't want to see this and I don't want to see that, you end up in the situation of a group like this, especially this year. I think with short breaks and the how close you have to be with all the playing group when you're not training them and playing them, I think it's, really address it, but then, really proactively coach the positive side of it. I know people want rockets and, you know, tearing strips off walls, but I just don't think you can do that at the moment. I think the main thing, Carlton, for when I've seen them give up leads or give up goals in key points, you go back to when they played Port Adelaide and the Robbie Gray game. That was a structural and teaching thing. It wasn't for want and effort. It's just, it's little moments for me. And it seems like it's almost the hard learner rammer, isn't it? Like, it seems like they're going to have to learn a little bit by getting beaten in doing it. So you've got to show, all right, you know, when we take the ball out in this situation, next time we need to do this, this is us doing it good. That style of coaching, I don't know whether you guys agree or not.
When an opposition, when you're leading by, as Carlton were, as you're talking about, Half, when an opposition kicks two quick goals on you, okay, That's momentum. So the momentum swung. There's got to be something or somebody out on the ground that says, okay, we need to lock down now for the next 5 minutes. Take their momentum away, because they had the crowd there as well. So there's another goal in itself there with for West Coast. But what Carlton tried to do is they could try to continue to attack. So they then became easy to score against coming back the other way. So they just had to lock it down for a couple of minutes, probably 3 or 4 minutes, slow the game down, then they can go again. Because at the moment, all they're trying to do, and I like it, Whitey, they're trying to score and they're trying to be proactive. But the maturity side of it, the good teams, what they do is when they feel the momentum shift, let's just slow the game down, take a deep breath here. You know, be boring. Be boring for a couple of minutes until we take their momentum away.
We used to call it at Geelong half and Whitey, and as Rammer pointed out, everyone would go, yep, yeah, you sense it, two goals. We used to, the call used to go around the ground, a bit of fast possession. I know that sounds strange, but that meant as soon as we got possession, kick, mark or free kick, you went into that kick, mark style of footy. You weren't doing the overlap with handball. Yeah. You weren't sort of wheeling through into the corridor. You were going, it didn't mean also that you were just going slow and backwards, because that's where the opposition gets some momentum up and they get their tails up and they trap you. So that's why the term fast possession. So it meant I've taken a mark off Rammer, who, say, on the half-back flank, he's kicked it up the line, but then as soon as I see another one, I kick it to that. It's just, it's almost playing that keepings off with a bit of speed. So kick it to that player, all right, turn, find the targets, just find it. And that's 2 minutes of the opposition having to keep moving, defending, which takes a bit of sting out of their tail. But also you tend to find you might be able to kick a goal out of that, or you just push the game into your half and you trap it there for the next few minutes. That's why we called it fast possession, and that's a bit of the maturity Rammer's talking about.
Carlton were very impressive for a large portion of the game. Absolutely. Their pressure, their desire, you know, clearly you can see that the Blues are on the right track. But I think from a West Coast point of view, it's 3 weeks in a row now where they've given up a pretty sizable lead and have been powerful and really have been extremely strong in going over the top of sides, arresting their momentum and then just pushing away like a good team. You just wonder if they start playing that sort of footy earlier, whether that is the best football, because, you know, as I said, they're keeping the opposition in it for a long way, but when they get going, they're very, very, very good.
They're big, strong, they're experienced, and they've got Dom Sheeder, who's one of the most underrated guns in the competition. Dom, again, kicking more goals and getting more possessions, Jim.
Well, I was about to highlight that as well, Huff. This guy, his last sort of 12 months of football, I know we've had the break, but his last sort of the back half of last year and this half of this year has been nothing short of excellent. Because remember, this is a guy who was in and out of the side, you know, leading up to their premiership year, and they had an injury and they played him. It was a bit like what we were talking with Angus Brayshaw. He just got his opportunity and didn't let it go. You can't put him out of sight.
Yeah, he's a jet, Dom Sheed. Absolute jet. And the Eagles travelling nicely at the moment. The Blues have got Fremantle and the Gold Coast next 2 weeks. They might be able to get some reward for their effort if they can stay up for that long.
Just a track watcher, one I reckon who's just going under the radar a little bit, who could explode any time soon, is that young Waterman. He looks a really good player.
He's a lively type, is what he is. We'll get to a break, we'll come back
there, Whitey,
and have a bit of a look at tonight's game as well. We'll talk about the Brisbane game after 8 o'clock with Lachie Neal. So Brisbane fans, don't worry about that too much. We'll get Lachie in action after 8. Back with more shortly. Yes, nice to have you with us. Don't forget, after 8 o'clock, we will chat to Lachie Neal, if you don't mind, the champ from the Brisbane Lions, who is helping them become one of the real forces in the competition. And looking forward to having a chat to Lachie about his year and also the Brisbane Lions year. Just before we get to that, Jim, before we get to him, are you putting them in premiership contention, Brisbane?
Yes, definitely. I think we spoke last week. They seem to be, and Whitey, I think you touched on it. You sort of think with Brisbane, oh, they're one midfielder short, one forward short, one defender short, but they just keep getting their job done. They play with some speed. They've got a dangerous forward line. I think with the... I know Eric, the Rafa Nadal lookalike, Eric Hipwood had a day out, but they're all dangerous now with Archie getting some confidence as well. They've got dangerous matchups with all six of their forwards, which that's what you want. You want that unpredictability of who could kick a couple each week.
As long as they don't have to play the Tigers.
We'll talk about that with Lockie after 8 o'clock. Let's have a look at the games tonight, boys. Doubleheader tonight. Good for footy. A Monday night. St Kilda and Geelong is interesting. Geary and Bytel. Tell me this Bytel boy's got a bit to give. In Ed Phillips. Zach Jones has been rested. I'm not sure he rested against the Cats unless he's sore. Interesting call from the St Kilda hierarchy. Puff it. Your man, Jim. Garrett Rowan, Jake Colajani come in for Fogarty, Simpson and Guthrie, who have all been told they've been managed. But let's be honest, that's garbage. Zach Guthrie.
Zach.
Okay.
They're managed. They've all been managed, Rama, according to the storyline. Tell me about this Bytel early.
Managed out of the side.
talk me through this game, Jim, St Kilda and Geelong.
Well, you speak about Port Adelaide trying to frank their premiership contention. I think this one is a big one for the Saints. I reckon they've been great most of the year. They've probably coughed up two shockers. So I think with the way the Cats play and the way the Cats defend, this is a great test or a great proving for St Kilda with the way they move their footy, because Geelong are always make it very difficult for sides to move the football. And even themselves, Geelong, they can bring the game down to a grinding halt with their own ball movement. So I think this is a great test for the Saints with where they're at. And look, we know the Cats. They're the type of side this year who they might give you an 8 out of 10, but their poor is probably a 6 out of 10. They just sit in that window all the time, and it's up to the opposition to rise to the 8 or 9 to beat them. Do you think that's fair, Whitey, the way the Cats play?
100%.
I think they force the opposition to play well.
I was going to say, you have to play well to beat Geelong.
Yes.
So the Saints can't let the Cats bore them tonight. Geelong will try to slow the game down. They go through middle parts of the game where they don't score, but the opposition don't score. So the Saints got to keep the speed on the game. As when they win the ball back, he's got to go. He's got to go, because that's how you beat the Cats. The Cats. The question mark on the Cats always been their leg speed. So, and that's obviously St Kilda's one wood at the moment. Their leg speed and the way they move the ball. So they can't let them bore them to going into slow play. They can't. St Kilda can't go slow play because Geelong are slow playing.
You'd like to see in the first quarter half. You're the stoppage king. You'd like to see in the first quarter particularly, Marshall and Ryder in the ruck. I know no one's Nata Nui, but that principle of get up, hit the ball forward on the outside and get that momentum going forward, because that's what West Coast did really well against Geelong. Even Chris Scott said, the only problem is anytime you kick a goal, it means Nick Nata Nui gets it back at the centre bounce. Mm. Now, the Saints have a clear edge with their ruckman. Well, they'll have the clear edge across most sides, but get those outside hits, like spread the stoppage a little bit, the clearance, so when the Cats midfielders aren't having to just body up inside, get the ball on the outside early in the game, because it'll open up a lot of options for them.
Who wins, Jim?
Well, I'm going to go to the Cats, because I just think the known predictable quantity at the moment with the way the season's having to be played out.
And just while I've got you, Freo and Hawthorn tonight at Optus Stadium as well. Who wins that one?
Hawthorn.
Hawthorn. Rama, who wins, Saints or Cats?
Cats.
Freo and Hawthorn?
Well, you did not want to say that, did you?
No, I did a bit. I'm a believer in the Saints, but I think this game is... They're just not ready for it yet. And then Freo, Hawthorn... Where's that game at?
Optus Stadium. Perth.
Fremantle.
Fremantle. Whitey?
I'm going on for Hawthorn, just on trust. And that trust is sort of very, very sort of waning. But the St Kilda Geelong game, I'm looking forward to this game more than any other over this last 7 or 8 days, because we all think Geelong's a good team, but we're not entirely sure, and that's on trust. And we think St Kilda's the team coming through, but I don't think St Kilda's good enough to beat Geelong. But geez, if Geelong lose tonight, they've then got Port Adelaide.
Yeah. Geelong and Hawthorn for me as well tonight.
Massive game.
I want to tip St Kilda, but I'm going to tip Geelong.
I'm exactly the same as you.
Righto. Jim, always great to chat to you on a Monday morning. Cannot wait to catch you again next Monday. It's probably around 12C by then, not quite sure. But looking forward to the discussion regardless.
It's been like, where are we? Where are we? But I've enjoyed it, man. Enjoy the footy tonight, everyone.
We will do. Jimmy Bartel, Triple Premiership player, Brownlow medalist, Norm Smith medalist, and Monday review specialist on The Breakfast Club. We'll get